And now introducing Mr. Keith Lanton.
Good morning. It's Keith. Hope everybody had a pleasant summer weekend. Today is Monday, August 8th, second Monday of August. We are here in the heart of summer 2022. We are in the midst of gathering more economic data. On Friday, we got a surprising report. I would say one of the most surprising that we've seen in quite some time. The good news is that the job market remains very strong and robust. The concern is that it's so robust that the Federal Reserve may have to keep their foot on the accelerator and continue to raise interest rates. We'll talk about interest rates. Brad will be joining us to give us some more insights onto the markets and what he's seeing in the bond market as well. We'll be talking this morning about the passage in the Senate of the Inflation Reduction Act, which looks very likely to pass the House. So we'll spend some time talking about that, since that will be significant both for our personal lives as well as for financial markets. We'll talk about the news of the day, then we'll talk about Barron's, their outlook on the market, and then a couple of stocks mentioned in Barron's, one old company, General Electric, and their positive view on that company as it is looking to break itself up into three pieces, and then a company that's more exemplary of the new age of technology and mobile devices, and that is PayPal stock, which was spun off from eBay and has been on a wild ride for the last 12 months, and Barron's speaking positively on that stock, and then talking about online advertising and Apple getting into that business in a more serious way. So get us started this morning. I'm going to mention three books that Bill Gates suggests might be good summer reads as summer hopefully getting a little bit more time to enjoy some rest and relaxation, perhaps sitting by the pool or at the beach, or perhaps they'll have some vacation time. So some to consider. First book I'll mention is a book that was suggested to Bill Gates by his daughter, Jen. And the name of the book is The Power by Naomi Alderman. And this book is about a fascinating premise, perhaps scary for some. What if women were suddenly endowed with the ability to discharge a violent electric shock from their bodies is the thesis of this book. And Bill Gates suggests that this book is an interesting perspective, especially for men who are typically anatomically stronger than women. This would level set that and perhaps swing strength towards women, at least absolute strength, and what the world might look like if that were the case. Second book, Why We're Polarized by Ezra Klein. This is a book that explains how our polarized political views, whether it's left or right, arise more from our identities and the groups we feel we belong to, rather than a logical assessment of facts and policies, and that this proclivity has its origins in human history and the way our species evolved. So if you're interested in learning more, perhaps about the roots of polarization and what this author thinks that has to do with the way we're hardwired, this might be an interesting read for you. And finally, for those who are concerned about climate change, book by Kim Stanley Robinson called The Ministry for the Future explores a future in which humanity has failed to properly address climate change. Book starts out with a heat wave that kills 20 million people, perhaps not as outlandish as it would have sounded 20 or 30 years ago. So back to financial markets. Typically, we're in the heart of what's typically a quieter period in the financial markets when there's less participants that are active as folks are on vacation, both within the industry as well as people who are clients of the financial services industry. But we did get a very significant development over the weekend that might cause a little bit more market activity than happens in the first or second week of August in many summers, and that is the Senate passing the Inflation Reduction Act and what that may mean for individual sectors and the financial markets. Now, this legislation is certainly not as sweeping and bold as originally envisioned. You may remember that the Biden administration originally was targeting a $3.5 trillion package. This package is more in the $600 to $700 billion range and is the result of negotiations and compromise between Senators Schumer and Manchin. And over the weekend, Senator Sinema from Arizona came on board after a reduction or elimination, I should say, of one of the provisions, which was the carried interest would be eliminated for tax purposes. This is something that the private equity and hedge fund crowd was opposed to, and Senator Sinema was successful in eliminating that from the Inflation Reduction Act. So the vote on the Inflation Reduction Act was along party lines after a marathon weekend session. So the vote was 51-50 after Vice President Kamala Harris casted the tie-breaking vote. The legislation aims to fund clean energy initiatives, lower health care costs, create new jobs, among other things. About $433 billion would be spent on new investments, while the bill would reduce government deficits by approximately $300 billion, according to the latest version published by the Senate. If the Inflation Reduction Act passes, Medicare could directly negotiate prescription drug prices with drug makers for some of their most expensive medications, meaning patients would likely pay less. If drug companies raise prices faster than inflation, the new bill would require them to rebate the difference to Medicare patients. There would be a $2,000 a year cap on Medicare enrollees' out-of-pocket spending for prescription drugs. One meaningful provision that was struck from this act was the ability for private insurance companies to negotiate drug prices. Something that certainly would have put pressure a lot more pressure on the pharmaceutical companies, but that provision couldn't pass the reconciliation process. Needed to avoid a filibuster in the Senate and was struck from the legislation. The bill will also invest $369 billion in programs that aim to accelerate the transition to cleaner energy. They would go to solar panels, wind turbines, and other clean energy sources. You're seeing some activity in some of those stocks today. First Solar, one getting an upgrade and the stock higher this morning. Electric vehicle manufacturers and consumers could benefit as well. Electric vehicle buyers are currently eligible for up to $7,500 in tax credits, but those benefits are limited to the first 200,000 eligible vehicles each automaker sells. This new bill would lift those caps. So if you buy the 200,001 of the new model vehicle that you're purchasing, you would still be eligible for a tax credit. And this act would also offer up to $4,000 in credits to people who buy used electronic vehicles, certainly helping the used market for EVs. The Inflation Reduction Act would require companies with at least $1 billion in income to apply a 15% tax rate on their book income. So you may say to yourself, well, isn't the corporate tax rate 21%? It is, but there's deductions and credits in there that oftentimes results in companies paying less than 15%. This bill would require companies to pay a minimum of 15%, and that provision is expected to be a source of revenue of about $313 billion in new revenue, and that will provide more than 40% of the bill's funding. Democrats also have a 1% excise tax on stock buybacks, which have exploded in recent years and have come under attack. So we'll see if this legislation passes, if and what effects that may have on buybacks and the overall market. It's expected that this provision could result in an additional $74 billion in revenue for the Treasury. Curbing inflation is one of the hoped for outcomes of this legislation, and it's hoped that the inflation would get curbed by those caps on prescription drug prices, as well as by the government assisting in the credits that are being provided to the electric vehicle industry, which potentially could lower the costs of cars, specifically electric vehicle automobiles. All right, moving on to other news this morning. Let me get you a quick snapshot on what futures are looking like here. We're seeing Dow futures up about 155 points, which is just about half of 1% higher. S&P futures are up about 25 points, about 0.6% higher. NASDAQ futures up 104 points. And Russell 2000 futures are up 11 points this morning. This is on the heels of the Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, and some positive sentiment carrying forward from last week, even though that jobs report came in, by all accounts, hot. Nevertheless, the market's reacting fairly muted and fairly positively to that set of data, and we'll talk a little bit about why, even though interest rates moved up significantly on Friday, especially on the short end of the curve, as expectations about the Fed raising rates more than expected prior to Friday have emerged. Nevertheless, we are seeing the stock markets holding on despite these rising Treasury yields. Treasury yields this morning are down a little bit, but this is after a monster move on Friday. The 2-year is at a 3.24. The 10-year is at a 2.80. That's down 4 basis points. And the 30-year is at a 3.03, down 3 basis points. Energy prices this morning. Oil is moving lower by $1 a barrel, down 1%. Perhaps equally important, or perhaps even more important, is natural gas is down 26 cents, which is over 3% to $7.80. Gold is up about $9 an ounce. Gold has been very quiet for the last 6 to 12 months. Gold's trading around $1,800, and silver is up about 45 cents this morning, and it's hovering around $20 an ounce. Silver also has not been a significant market mover for some time. In corporate news, Roku, R-O-K-U, one of the pandemic darlings, downgraded to sell from hold at Pivotal. This despite the stock already being down almost 70% off of its highs. Another lockdown darling, Carvana, CVNA, also significantly off its highs, also being downgraded this morning to underweight from neutral at J.P. Morgan. IPO that was a favorite for market participants for some time that's suffering this morning is Palantir Technologies, symbol PLTR. Stock's down about 15% or $1.70 this morning after missing earnings by 4 cents, reporting revenues in line, but guiding third quarter revenues below consensus and guiding 2022 revenues below consensus as well. Global Blood Therapeutics, symbol GBT, up another 4% this morning after Pfizer confirmed their plans to acquire the Global Blood Therapeutics company in a transaction valued at $68.50 per share in cash for a total enterprise value of $5.5 billion. Global Blood Therapeutics had moved up significantly last week on expectations that Pfizer would be making a formal bid for the company. Barrick, the gold company, symbol GOLD, is up to up 47 cents, 3% after beating earnings and reporting revenues in line. Overseas, equity indices in the Asia-Pacific region began the week on a mixed note. Japan up 0.3%. Hang Seng in Hong Kong was down 0.8%, but the Shanghai Composite was up 0.3%. India, South Korea, Australia, all modestly higher. European averages all up anywhere between about 0.5% and 1% across the board. Over the weekend, we got earnings from Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett's company. The earnings in the operating units were strong, but the headline number, the actual earnings were negative, and that's largely because of the stock market decline in the second quarter. Warren Buffett's suggestion is to pay less attention to the vacillations in the stock prices, look at the underlying business, and his thesis is that the stock investments over time will bear fruit and take care of themselves. In general news, We talked that Democrats forced to remove a provision in the Inflation Reduction Act that would have capped the prices of drugs in the commercial market because it violated Senate reconciliation rules. Wall Street Journal reporting that U.S. and Iran are getting close to reviving a nuclear deal. Taiwan news, Bloomberg saying that Taiwan believes that Chinese military drills are simulating an attack on the island. China announcing a new wave of military simulations this morning as they continue to express their displeasure with House Speaker Pelosi's visit. And Wall Street Journal reporting that Hong Kong is lowering their coronavirus quarantine period to 3 days, perhaps easing some of the concerns about slowing economic activity due to the extreme coronavirus positions taken by the Chinese government, both in Hong Kong and on the mainland. What's going on this week? We continue to get earnings numbers and reports this week. Tomorrow we get reports from Coinbase, Emerson, Norwegian Cruise Lines. Also tomorrow on Tuesday, the Bureau of Labor Statistics is reporting its preliminary employee compensation and productivity data for the second quarter. Unit labor costs expected to increase at 6.7%. Productivity is seen declining 4.1%. Wednesday, Disney releases earnings, and we get probably the key economic report of the week, which is when the BLS is releasing the Consumer Price Index for July, expecting an 8.7% year-over-year increase compared with a 9.1% jump in June. This drop anticipated as a result of falling energy prices and the carry-on influence for gasoline prices. Core CPI, which excludes food and energy, is seen increasing 6.1%, and that's up from 5.9% previously. Thursday, we get the producer price index for July. That is expected to come in at 10.4% versus 11.3% last year. Same reason for the big drop is anticipated drop in the energy costs. And then on Friday, we get the University of Michigan releasing its Consumer Sentiment Index for August, looking for that to come in at 53, up slightly from 51.5 in June. So moving on to Barron's. Barron's certainly talking about the employment report. One article, the Trader article, how the stock market survived July's jobs report and lived to fight another day. Talking about how the market held up on Friday despite the super move in interest rates, especially on the short end of the yield curve. Barron's saying that inflation is sticky, but economic growth is sticky too, and that puts the Federal Reserve and investors in a bind. Look no further than Friday's payrolls report release. U.S. added 528,000 jobs in July, more than doubling estimates of 250, while the unemployment rate dipped to 3.5% from 3.6%. If you're worried about a recession, there's no sign of one here. The strong report caused most of the financial markets to respond just as you'd expect for the most part. Treasury yields jumped, the U.S. dollar surged, and the chances of a three-quarter point interest rate hike in September rose to 65% from 28% the week before. The stock market, however, was relatively quiet, with the S&P index finishing the day down just 0.2%. It was an odd reaction given that the jobs data likely means more rate increase. Still, it makes a strange kind of sense. Such underlying growth resilience is positive for risky assets even as higher rates are a negative. Of course, the stock market is worried more than just about the Fed. Heading into earnings season, everyone seemed terrified that profits would fall far short of expectations and guidance would be slashed, and that isn't quite what happened. So far, 432 S&P 500 companies have reported earnings. Aggregate earnings have come in 5.8% above expectations, and 77% of companies have reported better than expected profit. Revenue, meanwhile, is growing at a 13% clip, helping to drive those earnings beats. That hasn't kept future earnings estimates from being revised lower, but the dramatic cuts that were expected haven't materialized, at least not as of yet. So what we're experiencing, Barron's goes on to say, is a tug of war between PEs as those E's go up and the stock prices. So the PE versus the earnings. As interest rates go up, the expectation is that PE ratios will fall as future earnings become less valuable and as you get more competition for stocks from bonds. On the flip side, as earnings go up, that makes the earnings component of the PE ratios lower. So we're getting this tug of war here as the economy shows resilience. At the same time, we're seeing those higher interest rates. In the up and down Wall Street column, Barron said job boom means there is no recession, but it also boosts pressure for rate hikes. What happened to the R word for recession? The latest data make the notion that the U.S. economy is contracting, certainly much more debatable. Nevertheless, the Fed last week and then this morning, some more commentary from Fed officials that they will not relent in their battle against inflation. If you look back at last week, on the week, the two-year note, the coupon most sensitive to interest rate expectations jumped 35 basis points to 3.25%. The 10-year rose 10 basis points to 2.84. The inversion of the yield curve with the two-year, 41 basis points above the 10-year, and that is the most popular harbinger of recession. But the Fed's preferred yield gauge, the three-month versus the 10-year, remains positive by 35 basis points. But that spread has dramatically shrunk just in the last week. Looking ahead, the Fed's focus will be on inflation readings, particularly the CPI, which is expected to come out Wednesday, which we talked about. And then on Thursday, there will be attention paid to those producer prices. Talking about the jobs market, Barron saying that this labor market that we're experiencing right now does not look like the type of labor market we would see if we were heading into a recession. Every recession in recent memory was preceded by a jobs market that was rolling over. Yet the current job market has a few cracks, but based on that 528,000 new jobs, certainly appears those cracks are small at the moment. If you're looking for the one crack in the jobs numbers for June, it was that job openings dropped by the largest amount on record outside of the COVID recession. But the fact that those jobs dropped in terms of the number of job openings relative to the number of people who are looking for work, the number of job openings remains robust. And if you look at the number of job openings, even though it contracted significantly, and you look at it relative to pre-COVID levels in June of 2019, there are still 53% more job openings in 2022 than there were in 2019. So the real question is not if this job market is susceptible to weakness at the current moment, but how much cold water or how many more rate increases is the Fed going to pour on this job market? And if they pour enough cold water on it, they very well may succeed in cooling it off and perhaps driving down inflation as a result as well. So, mentioned a couple of stocks, and then I'll turn it over to Brad. Barron's cover story, front page, talked about General Electric. General Electric stock is a buy as a breakup looms is the title of the article. General Electric, once arguably the greatest of American companies, will soon cease to exist, at least as the industry titan it once was. Soon General Electric will be broken up into GE Aviation, Energy, and Healthcare. Each will be independent individual businesses, starting with GE Healthcare, which could be spun off as early as the beginning of next year. Every ending, however, is also a new beginning. Unencumbered by the past and past mistakes, the three companies, Barron says, have the potential to compete more fiercely than the old cumbersome behemoth could. What's more, they can earn higher stock market valuations separately than they could as part of an unwieldy conglomerate. Taking a look at each of the three businesses and taking a look at where GE is today, around $73 a share, Barron's argues that when you look at the sum of the parts here, you'll be looking potentially at a much higher valuation than the current valuation. Take GE's aerospace unit, which makes engines for Boeing 737 MAX and the Airbus A321neo. A recovery, they say, is in the cards for this business with travel bouncing back. If you were to price or value this business at about 11 times 2021 earnings before interest, taxes, and depreciation, and compare that that 11 times to their competitors in the space like Raytheon, you'd be looking at a valuation of this business As a standalone entity at roughly $85 billion, the Barron's authors argue that's conservative. This business used to have talk of valuation of north of $100 billion. And after the spinoff of GE Aerospace, it is very possible that some of the competitors in this space, like United Technologies, Honeywell, and Lockheed Martin, might pursue GE Aviation as a merger candidate. Next business, GE Healthcare, which makes diagnostic imaging equipment, including MRIs and TC scanners and ultrasound scanners. This business is set to thrive as an independent company. This business, Barron's estimates, when looking at competitors like Siemens and Philips and Danaher, that this business could fetch a valuation of $50 to $60 billion. And finally, the business that is the least attractive in terms of valuation is what will be called GE Vernova. This is GE's power business. This is a renewable energy business focused on wind turbines and natural gas equipment. Both those businesses are under some pressure. The wind technology business, even though GE is one of the leading manufacturers of wind turbines, which sounds like it would be a wonderful business, unfortunately, this business is unprofitable because the business is what the CEO Culp calls immature. And what's happening is, as quickly as GE comes up with a new technology to develop a better wind turbine, the market and the technology continue to evolve, and they aren't able to produce enough of those new turbines and sell them because a new technology comes along, and they aren't able to recoup their investment in their R&D. The hope is that this technology will become more mature and this business will become more valuable. The other piece of this business is natural gas turbines. This is a business that's getting increasing attention after the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the possibility that the evaporation of the natural gas business will happen a lot more slowly than previously anticipated. So the power business is a business that could be worth up to $10 billion currently, but does have the potential, if conditions change, to be worth meaningfully more than that. But if you put all these businesses together, Barron's suggests that you'd be looking about $160 billion in individual companies of each of these specific components. And if you back out some of the liabilities on the balance sheet, which total about $32 billion, you come up with a overall valuation net of debt for General Electric at $130 to $140 billion. That's roughly $125 a share, which is about 70% higher than where General Electric is trading today. I'll quickly talk about PayPal and then real quickly talk about advertising and Apple, and then I'll turn things over to Brad. So PayPal is a opposite of General Electric. Here is a darling of the internet, thrived during COVID, but the stock has come crashing and burning back down to earth, falling from about $300 a share to under $100 a share. But Barron says there's a budding bull case for PayPal. The stock is now trading at 21 times 2023 earnings, and is growing earnings at roughly 20%. Recently, Wall Street activist Elliott Management, known for its hardball tactics and takeover battles, took a 2% stake in PayPal worth about $2 billion. The company is aiming to refocus on its core, PayPal and Venmo digital wallets. They also announced a $15 billion share buyback, and they plan to return more than 75% of their free cash flow to investors. This is the thought process behind the bullish case that Barron's is laying out for PayPal. Finally, I'll mention Apple, and Barron's talking about Apple getting into the advertising business. Advertising is going strong. Apple wants in. Somewhat controversial that Apple is looking to get into the advertising business because they've made it so much more difficult with their privacy policies for Meta and Twitter and companies like Snap. To be able to focus on their advertising business because they're getting less data from Apple in order to more effectively target the ads to Apple clients using Apple devices. But Apple is gearing up to enhance their advertising strategy with what they call the most privacy-forward, sophisticated demand-side platform possible. Apple saying that that one of the places that they see significant potential for advertising revenue is on their App Store, where they could see advertising revenue reach $7 billion by 2025. Just to give an idea of the potential for Apple in the ad business, Apple is hoping to generate about $4 billion in revenue this year from advertising, and that's just 0.2% of the $600 billion online advertising market. If Apple could get that number up to just $20 billion by 2025, that would be a significant boost to revenue and profitability, because advertising revenue margins are 70 to 80%, and this push into advertising could fall significantly to the bottom line as Apple targets mobile ads. Going to turn it over to Brad. Good morning, Brad.
Morning, Keith. Good morning, everyone. Trying to keep it brief this morning because it's too hot to talk too much. Municipals, as treasuries, have had a gigantic rally off their lows, as most of you know. You now need to go out about 5 years to get 2% tax-free in municipals. On Friday, 3% bonds going out around 12 years, close to par for New York and Virginia. So that really sets a new level. You know, we're really about 5-6 points, maybe even a little bit more off the low trades. I do think these 4% bonds still hold some value. Don't get me wrong, I would love to find these 4% bonds 5 to 10 years short of final maturities at these levels, but as we know, the market has rallied. And just keeping in mind, considering that last year some of these 4% munis were trading above 120 cents on the dollar, I still do see some value here. 4% tax-free is a decent cushion. It's not 5 or 6, but in the last 10 years, with a few exceptions, 4 has been a good level to buy into tax-free bonds. Perpetual preferreds also had a major move. There's a big CPI report coming out on Wednesday. Every major economic number will move the markets. This may not be as sleepy in August as we'd like to have. The 10-year is currently at 280. Keep an eye on that 10-year. This will be a leading indicator for everything, so to speak. That's all I have for today, and I'll turn it back to Keith. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad. That's everything I've got.
Thank you for listening to Mr. Keith Lanton. This podcast is available on most platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Pandora. For more information, please visit our website at www.heraldlantern.com.
Opinions expressed herein are subject to change and not necessarily the opinion of the firm. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. The information presented herein is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide personal investment advice. It is important that you consider your tolerance for risk and investment goals when making investment decisions. Investing in securities does involve risk and the potential of losing money. The material does not constitute research, investment advice, or trade recommendations.